Happy Wednesday. It's Women That Shred. I don't know why I always like sing it.
Happy Wednesday.
Hi, everyone. We have Jen Peachman.
Hi, so happy to be here.
I was just thinking about this the other day that you and I have seen each other in person twice within like a couple months.
I know. It's been the best start to the year ever.
Well, I mean, I lucked out that I live in a city now where everybody wants to have their conferences, but I don't know if they're going to want to do that anymore because it's like the weather is just awful. Like, because you, both the conferences that you came to, it was
It was chilly. Yeah, I was not prepared for that. I mean, I'm a Clevelander. I'm not, you know, immune to the snow and cold weather. I was not packed ready for San Diego and the weather that we had, but it was still beautiful. I'll take the sunshine and vitamin D all day, girlfriend.
I was going to say, plus palm trees. Like, I mean,
palm trees.
With palm trees.
Yeah. You can't be in a bad mood when you've got palm trees around you for sure.
Yeah. In the ocean. But how are you?
I'm doing great, girl. Yeah. How are you?
I'm good. So I wanted to, you know, obviously, like I always kind of dive into these, our topics, just because we don't have much time and, you know, 30 minutes goes by really quickly. I know the weather is, Christina's in LA, so she gets it. Hey, Allie. Yay. I love when people just start popping in. So Jen, I wanted to kind of give a little bit of background as to like how I first found out who you were. And then when I heard your story for the first time, I was like, oh my gosh. So I remember when it was, gosh, I think like 2018 around then. And obviously you're in the industry. So like, you know, we had mutual connections, but I remember I was very intentional about reaching out to you because you were working with TMC at the time. And I wanted our company that I was working with to be involved. I remember I reached out to you and you were super gracious and we ended up becoming members. And then I got to come to Nashville where Allie's in Nashville and obviously, you know, lots of love and prayers to Nashville right now. But I got to go down there and speak and I got to meet you for the first time. But I remember I didn't really know anything about you. And there was a dinner or a breakfast or something where they talked about your story, about, you know, Molly's story. And then, cause you had done a fundraiser. I think you had done a fundraiser in Nashville. Didn't you guys have like a golf tournament to raise money?
Yeah. So, you know, before I started at TMC, you know, I started doing what we called Mulligans for Morgan. It was a golf outing that
and
we
I'm
started
sorry,
doing.
I said Molly Morgan, apologize.
No worries. It was a golf outing that we started locally to raise money for the Cystinosis Research Foundation. And when I was at TMC, they were gracious enough to help with those Mulligans for Morgan's events at their conferences. Okay. And a few times, you know, got up on stage and told my story. It's interesting that you say that, you know, a lot of people, you know, don't know my story personally or didn't know it until I started talking about it. But yeah, I think that year was, I think, our biggest year that we raised. I think we raised over $33,000 that year and donated it to a foundation through a lot of gracious folks within the mortgage industry, some friends and family along the way, of course, too. But yeah, across the years, I think we've donated over $125,000 to various foundations in my daughter's honor as she fights a pretty rare disease. Yeah. So, you know, a lot of people will be like, oh my God, I had no idea. She looks so normal. She looks so pretty and cute. And that's the trouble with a lot of, like, we call them invisible diseases, right? You can't tell that there's anything wrong with someone. There's only about 500 people in the United States that has what she has.
Really?
There's only about 2,000 people in the world. So you don't know about it. Doctors haven't heard about it. It's certainly been a struggle. But this weekend, we celebrated her 3-year kidney transplant anniversary. So it's been a journey, but it's all turned out very, very well for her. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I follow you on Instagram. So, and I see that she seems to be doing really well. But yeah, it was just, it was incredible because I'm sitting there and, you know, they're like, oh, and Jen and the tournament and we raised all this money. And then you shared your story. And I was just like, my jaw dropped because once again, it's one of those things where, like you said, not many people know your story, the story in your kind of personal life until you shared it. So it's like, you never know what's going on. And you could just, it's amazing how people assume things about people. And then you hear something like that and you think, oh my gosh, wow, here's this woman who, you know, like I just see her working her little tail off, you know, out there doing her thing. And here at home, she must be going through just, I mean, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. Like, yeah. How does one manage to do that? I mean, that is a lot. Wife, mother, you know, employee. Yeah. I mean, that's why I admire you so much. So much respect, Jen.
You know, thank you. First of all, I think, you know, for me, it's always, you know, I struggled with it for a while. Like, do I want to tell people about this? Right. Eventually they're going to find out, because one day I'm going to either lose it or not have it together, and they'll find out about it. Right. And it took me many years to even talk about it without being able to cry. Right. Cause if you look it up, it's not a fun read. And, you know, over the years of just, you know, working with different organizations, it became part of my story, right? Because actually it was one of my clients that was at the Mortgage Collaborative. I was showing him a picture of my kids and he was like, well, what ages are they? And at the time they were the same size, but they're 4 years apart. And they were like, wait, how are they both the same size? And I was like, oh, I'm going to have to tell you the story now. Right. So I told him the story and he was flabbergasted, just in shock, and was like, you know, what can we do to help? And that's where it really started from. From that, you know, I got the courage a few times to go on stage and really tell her story. I wrote something that I read on stage that I don't know how I made it through it. Quite frankly, it was like an out of body experience, right? But along the way, you know, what I've done is try to balance it all. And it's not easy. I will tell you, I've had to make some significant career shifts to do what's best for me and my family. You know, it's when she was really at her sickest, no one knew, you know, there was a hospital, there was a nurse coming to my house every single week. There was ambulances coming on the regular. And it came to the point where I realized that I couldn't take care of her unless I took better care of myself. Because during the transplant process, I was all ready to give her my kidney and we were a perfect match, but my stress level was so high. My blood pressure was off the charts and they were like, you can't do it. We won't allow it. And for me, that was a big moment of me saying, what am I doing? Like, why am I not taking better care of myself? In the second that she needs me, I can't do this for her because I haven't been taking care of myself. So, you know, along the way, I've learned some hard lessons. But I've also learned, you know, I have to advocate for her, number one. And then along the way, you know, opportunities will come, jobs will come and go, but family is always there. And I'm her caretaker. I'm her mother. You know, we've found a lot of strength in really connecting with other families that have cystinosis, have had a kidney transplant. My daughter is actually mentoring kids that are her age that are going through kidney transplants. So, you know, she's able to give back. We've given back monetarily, you know, we've connected with families, but I think the proudest moment for me, for her, was, you know, a year after a kidney transplant. That year after is kind of the most important time. And it was a struggle getting there. I mean, feeding tubes, you know, things against her will that we had to do in order to keep her alive. She was in a pretty crappy place. You know, but once she knew that this was hers, I kind of treated it like, hey, this is your baby. This is your kidney, right? You're 12 years old. No 12-year-old should have to deal with this, but you're dealing with it. So it's yours to take care of. It's yours to control. And your medication schedule is something that you need to take ownership of going forward, right? Because we're transitioning her to that adolescent adult care, right? So I saw a transformation with her in that first year. She had to, I made a bet with her. I was like, for the first year, if you have flawless kidney labs, which she had never had before in her life, we will take that feeding tube out, right? 1 year, this girl all the labs. I mean, the best we've ever seen. She's like, all right, I'm ready. Let's take this feeding tube out. Let's do all my pills by mouth. She takes about 40 pills a day. So it's a lot.
She still has to take 40 pills a day?
Yeah, it was much more than that before. It was probably,
probably
close to 100. It was every hour. There was something, and it was just too much for her to handle by mouth without getting sick. So we were kind of supplementing with food and with medication. So once that opportunity to get that feeding tube out, like any 13-year-old girl would want, she wanted that sucker out. So we took it out, and her doctors were okay with that. Once they saw that transformation in her, that's when they approached her and said, hey, there are so many other little girls. They might not have the same disease that you do, but they're going through the same probably struggles, and they're looking to get their first kidney transplant too. Can you help them through that? And her first mentor or mentee is now like one of her best friends. They went to homecoming together with a bunch of friends freshman year. So like, she's building her little community, because I think she's seen the benefits of us connecting with other families at these conferences that we're raising money for. And, you know, she doesn't feel like she's the only kid in the world that's dealing with all this stuff in the midst of COVID too. Right. Yeah. It's funny. People always ask, you know, who's your favorite kid or like whatever. And I was like, I always say Morgan's my pride. Maddie is my joy, because I'm just so proud of the little young woman she's becoming. I hate to say that, but she's going to be 16 this summer.
I saw that she's like been driving and that's what I was wondering.
My baby has been driving my baby. If anyone knows me, you know, I love my Jeep Wrangler. It is my baby.
Yeah.
And my baby is driving my baby. She's really good at it, but she makes her mom a little nervous sometimes.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Okay. First of all, when someone says, who's your favorite kid? Like, who asks that? I'm sorry.
Someone asked me that actually at a dinner. It was,
someone actually asked that.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, I don't have a favorite, you know, the typical mom answer. And I was like, well, if I'm going to answer it, I'll tell you, I don't have a favorite. Morgan's my pride. Maddie's my joy. Yeah, so
that's a good answer. I would have been like, what's wrong with you? Oh my God. Yeah. If you ask my kids, I'm the favorite child and that's okay. Well, it's funny.
My kids also sign everything.
They think the other one is the favorite. Like my daughter will think that she's like, Nicholas is your favorite. And then Nicholas is like, Amelia is your favorite. I'm like, what is going on?
What's the deal? My kids will leave like little notes in my notebook and it'll say, love your favorite child, whatever. Yeah. They do it all the time. It's a kid thing. I don't know. And I can still do it with my parents. Like, I'm your favorite. I'm my brother. Come on. Right.
Yeah. Oh my God, Allie, I had no idea. You're so freaking strong. She's so lucky to have a mom like you. Yeah, she is very lucky and blessed to have a mom like you. And clearly you're not just being a fantastic mom, but you're being a fantastic role model in the sense that here she's giving back. Like there's a lot of kids that would take it like, woe is me. And really, you know, take it in a way that they would feel like helpless. And the fact that she's willing to help others. Like, I think that's a huge testament to how you have been strong and how you've reacted and what you've done at home, because clearly I don't see what's going on behind doors, but obviously you're doing a good job, because if that's how she is responding to this and how that she is, you know, dealing with it, like that's like, I just assume like this is going to be so much bigger than you guys can even imagine, you know, just with,
I mean, there were years where it consumed our day, right? Like our world was around her medication schedule.
Yeah.
With time you get used to it. It becomes a part of your everyday. So it doesn't feel like it's overwhelming, but you know, when she was really, really sick, I mean, we're sitting in my office, but this was temporarily her bedroom for probably about a year, because she couldn't walk upstairs anymore. Right. So like we had to have her on the first level. So like for me, it's always adjusting, right? I feel like I'm always adjusting, pivoting, whatever you call it. Yeah. But you know, I think for her, she's like her mom. She likes to be in control, right? And there is a lot of this disease that she just can't control. So I've seen over the years, like, I mean, when she was like 9 and 10 years old, we were talking medical terminology that most kids would never even understand, but it makes sense to her, right? You know, and then over the years, I've really just kind of given her more responsibility so that she can control, you know, what time do you want to do your medication? If you have to do it every 6 hours, what works for your schedule? Like, when do you feel best doing it during the day? When she had a feeding tube, right? Like, she hated it. She was super mad at me for probably a good 2 years. But it saved her life. Like, there, she would have never gotten a kidney transplant if she wouldn't have had the feeding tube. But then when she had it, no one else was taking care of it. No one else was touching it. She was pushing her medication through there because she had control over that little piece of her day. And that seemed to make a big difference for her. I think, you know, as she's become a teenager and, you know, now almost driving, a little scary, it's, you know, allowing her to take control, right? Like, and her doctors and I have worked together to say, I can be in the room at her appointments, but I don't need to be. She knows her medication schedule. She knows the names and the doses. I don't even know it anymore, which is, I couldn't have said that 3 years ago. Like, there was no, it was me with a book with all these notes, like a crazy mom trying to get through everything. And now I think we have a better relationship because she's seen me fight for her. She's seen me fight off some nurses. She's seen me get lippy with doctors.
She sees what a mother's love is, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's mama bear.
Yeah. She sees the mama bear come out and she'll be like, oh no, here she goes. Like, right. So, you know, I think it's empowering her to live her best life. And even if it's different than her peers or, you know, not exactly what we had planned for, right? Like, we always celebrate our little milestones and little victories. Like, every year we celebrate her transplant anniversary. I made the mistake of the first year taking her to Colorado for a week. I was like, that'll be the first year thing. Yeah. After that, we'll do smaller things, right?
Yeah, so, like, you set the bar really high that first year.
I set it a little high. That was my biggest mistake as a mother, is setting the bar really high.
Yeah.
The next year we ended up doing like a hotel suite, right? This year we just did brunch with friends and shopping. So we're getting back to reality, but
yeah.
You know, when you have a life-changing event and, like, you know, it's such a big deal. Like, she's a different person. She's grown a foot and a half in 3 years and has gained like 50 pounds. Like, she's a whole nother woman, right? So I have to celebrate that because she could really not be here. So it's amazing to watch, and it's, you know, it's, she's my pride. Like, people always say, when you light up, when you talk about her, and it's because, you know, you see what she does. She, everything that they've said she couldn't do, she's done. Everything that they say that they question her about, she proves them wrong. And we call it the Peachman spirit over here. Like, tell me what I can't do. Like,
yeah.
Game on. Let's go.
Oh, gosh. So did you end up giving her your kidney? Did it end up, or they had to take, you couldn't get your stress
I did
level?
Not. Yeah, I did not. They told me, so part of the transplant process is when you're eliminated, and it's about a year process.
Okay.
When we got down to the final thing, they were like, no. So you can get listed at multiple hospitals. So okay. We had her listed in Cincinnati, Cleveland, and we were on in the process of having her listed in Detroit. When we got a call for Cincinnati, we went down to Cincinnati. It was a deceased donor. They ended up not doing the transplant because the kidney was too damaged, which was devastating. You know, you pack your whole family up, you head to Cincinnati, and then you're like, see you later. It's not going to happen. Right. After that, it was really COVID hit, like March 15th, right? So it was like everything was shutting down. The transplant units at a lot of hospitals were shutting down. We ended up going back to a hospital in Cleveland and getting a whole new team involved, and I was in the process of getting recertified to do it and give her my kidney. But a week into the process, we got a second call that there was a deceased donor. I actually rejected that kidney, which you have the ability to say yes or no. And it's complicated.
They tell you like the circumstances.
They tell you the circumstances, and they give like a rating to the kidney.
Oh.
And it was a, someone who was in jail that was a drug abuser that had, you know, was older, and it it wasn't a great kidney option for, I thought, for my daughter. So yeah. I said, thanks, but no thanks.
You should be able to be picky about like what's going on in your daughter's body.
That was a weird thing though. I was like, oh my God, what if we don't get a call? Like you're just racing in your mind. But I knew because a lot of the transplant the transplant centers were shutting down, there was going to be an influx of organs that that had nowhere else to go. Yeah. So 2 days later, I got a call, from the hospital, and we went in. Unfortunately, it was a very young child that passed away. We wanted to contact the family. They have decided they don't want to connect with us, which I'm sure that's a difficult thing to do. That was really tough for Morgan. She's like, I really would like to meet the family of, you know, who gave this to me.
Yeah.
I said, honey, you know, it's a significant loss for them. You know, it's got to be tough. So anyway, it ended up going through. The surgery did not go as planned. There was some serious complications along the way. We ended up staying 2 weeks in the hospital, half of which in ICU. And then they sent us home. And it was really kind of... It's like every week blood draws for the first 12 weeks, followed by every 2 weeks, then every month. And she still does blood work every single month. So, but the nice thing is we don't see the doctor as much. We only see her every quarter. So as much as we love the hospital and our doctors and teams, like it's getting difficult.
It's okay. Thank you.
Yeah. We're like, we love you, but deuces till the new year. Right. Yeah. So we'll see them again here next month.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Like just like hearing more and more in the details and everything, like once again, like that is just.
Yeah. It's a lot, you know, but I think, you know, in retrospect, like people have said, like, do you regret, you know, having this be like a part of your public life? Do you like regret, you know, sharing all these details? And you know, I've had this conversation with Morgan before, like she's also in charge of what I am and what am I not allowed to share on her behalf.
Yeah.
So I don't regret it. Right. I talk to people all the time and they'll be like, oh my God, how's your daughter? Right. I see pictures of her. She looks amazing. Or, you know, I get calls from people that their kid has been diagnosed with a rare disease and they heard that my kid had one too. And, you know, it might not be the same thing or the same circumstances, but, you know, knowing that someone else is out there who's dealing with, you know, someone in their family that has a significant and serious life medical issue it's a bonding experience.
I love it and you're helping someone. Like, I think when people say, like, hey, do you regret sharing your story or being so personal about it? I'm like, I think we need to be sharing more of our stories. And because there are so many people out there, unfortunately, that feel like they're the only ones or they're alone or they don't have that support. And the fact that you're doing that for so many people, I'm sure it's helping you and it's helping Morgan and it's making you guys feel like, I'm sure Morgan, because, you know, I'm sure she's questioned, like, why me? Why am I going through this, right? But there's a purpose there. And who's to say that she's this vessel and that's her purpose is to be that person to help others, you know, that are going through it. Like, that's why I feel like it's so much bigger than.
It is. Yeah. I mean, we've made so many incredible connections with people from all over the world. Honestly, like we have best friends that are in Sweden, right? That we met at a conference, right? Like, who would know? Right. They're mad at me because I'm not on my way to California for the conference this year. But I mean, you're connecting with people on a whole nother level, which I think ultimately helps you. It helps them. And you build this sense of community and that you know that someone empathizes, right? They might not understand, but they can empathize with you because they've been there in some way, shape or form. And it's funny, like I remember at one MBA annual concert, they had Rachel Platten playing. I don't know if you know her. She's had a couple of hits. Okay. Her big one is Fight Song. And my daughter got my daughter got to sing that on stage with her with a whole bunch of little kids that have cystinosis at a conference I don't know, Morgan was probably 5 or 6. So probably 10 years ago or so. And a couple years later, there she is at this NBA annual concert playing Fight Song. And I can't even, the first two like notes of that song, I'm like, bleh, I just fall apart into pieces. So I start crying, like bawling. And some of my industry friends are like, oh my God, what happened? Like, what is going on? I'm like, I just can't listen to this song. And I walked out, right? And I went outside and just kind of get my breath. And I called my family and talked to them and then came back in. And then they were like, I've never seen someone have such an emotional response to some random song at an MBA conference. And I was like, well, let me tell you why. So it's funny, like it'll come out every once in a while, but it's always at the weirdest moments that I'll have this like weird connection to a song or something happen. Yeah. And then I have to tell the story because people can see it on your face, right? Like I don't have a good poker face. That is one thing that I'm not very good at having. But you know, I think then you just can have a story and then you can say, hey, my kid, you know, sang that song with her on stage at this conference that we donated all this money to. So, right. You can kind of reframe it back around other than why you were crying, but
yeah, but you're human, Jen. Like, that's the thing is like the fact that we even question, like, should we like show emotion or should we say anything? Like, I think that's what needs to change because I mean, that is part of your life. You're a mom and that's your daughter. Like, you should be able to talk about it and not feel like it's a shameful thing to be like, cause you're in a professional setting or an industry event, you know, it's like, yeah, that's why I love that you're so open about sharing this because people hearing this who have no idea, like Allie, they're going to be like, holy smokes. Like, and I think what'll happen is it'll hopefully create more compassion for people in general. Cause once again, you never know. And the fact that like you have been managed to pretty much keep it private for so long because I'm assuming that because you said she was 5 and she was already on stage. So when was she diagnosed? How old was she?
So I knew something was wrong right around 9 months, 12 months. And it wasn't, she wasn't walking. She would slam a bottle and then throw it right back up every single time she drank or ate. And she would wet through her diaper like every single hour. I mean, the money I spent on diapers as a 24-year-old little mom of a 1-year-old, I was like, oh my God, no kidding, diapers are expensive.
Yeah.
So we ended up switching pediatricians, right? Because nothing really registered as wrong with a general pediatrician. And we ended up kind of taking her to a few different specialists. They ran some tests and I'd say about 5 or 6 doctors later, right around her second birthday, she was diagnosed. So it was actually at an eye doctor. She has crystals in her eyes that she takes hourly eye drops for. And they noticed them on a slit lamp test. And the only production of those crystals in your eyes is from cystinosis. So, and people ask like, what the hell is cystinosis? I should probably tell you that. Right. So cystinosis is a genetic condition that is recessive. So my husband and I are both genetic carriers, had no idea that we were carriers of this disease, where ultimately your children have a defect in the lysosomes of their cells. So your lysosomes filter out the good and the bad. There's a defect that causes this amino acid called cysteine that you've never heard of to build up in your cells, and it causes them to crystallize and slowly die. So it is in every cell of her body. And the first thing it really attacks are, you know, the kidneys, eyes, muscles. It's not a fun disease. The life expectancy is not long. They actually I think the FDA just announced that they are doing clinical trials. So they have cured a couple of kids over the past few years. So all of those folks that donated money to Mulligans for Morgan, it did not go to no use. They are curing people with this disease. It's available through like a bone marrow transplant. Essentially, they would take out your bone marrow, genetically modify your DNA and put it back in, and it cures it all. So it's like science fiction stuff that's real life happening. So yeah, she was a normal little kiddo really until about 1 year. And then it took us probably a year to get her diagnosed, and it kind of gets progressively worse over time. So, but that being said, she's a little feisty little kid. We call her, although she be but little, she is fierce. That is Morgan to a T. She's about 4'10" and, you know, anything you set in front of her, she will conquer. So she's a special little kid. Not only is she like one in a million genetically, but she is like a really good human being too.
Yeah, no, I mean, clearly just, oh my gosh. And here we're at the 30-minute mark. So I want you to be able to give, if, cause I'm assuming people can still donate to.
Yeah. So you can go on to the Cystinosis Research Foundation. They have a website. There's a page for Morgan. You can certainly donate there. There's also the Cystinosis Research Foundation. Both are great places to put your money to. Both go directly to either finding a cure or helping families that are affected by cystinosis. You know, deal with the daily grind that we deal with. And both have, you know, an annual event every year where they bring our families from all across the world together. It's like little cystinosis family reunions. Those are probably Morgan's favorite thing of the entire year. We haven't been to one in a little while though, with COVID and transplant. I've just been keeping her masked up and safe.
Put it in the link. Thank you, Dale.
Yeah. So go for it. I know that, you know, There's only a few families. There's only 500 families in the United States, but I can tell you the amount of money and time and resources that takes from us personally to deal with this is a lot. And you know, anything you can do to help Morgan and other kids that are fighting the good fight every single day, that are, you know, have a battle in front of them that they don't deserve. If you've got some spare cash, they'll take it. 100% of it goes directly to donations. 100% go directly to the foundation. So they're not taking any money off the top. These are foundations that are run by family members of kids that have the disease or impacted, or some of that have even passed along. So it's near and dear to our hearts. And yeah, if you can spare some cash, I know that they would love it.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and donate as soon as this ends, for sure. Well, thank you, Jen. Like, I really, really do appreciate you sharing all of this. And,
thanks for having me. If, you know, if there's one thing I can say, it's me and Morgan's motto. It says, you know, when it rains, search for the rainbow. I mean, things can always be worse. So just always know that there's always something to be chasing, looking for that rainbow, looking forward, and make sure that you celebrate your milestones along the way. Like, even if it's not health stuff, please take some time to reflect and be grateful for what you have, because, you know, people are fighting battles that are big and scary and hairy and audacious behind the scenes. So make sure that you celebrate your wins, whatever they may be.
Love that. That's a perfect way to end. And thank you, Christina, for joining in, and Aline, who we have people to jump in always later in, you know, after the show. But thanks again, Jen. And
hope to see you soon, my love.
Yeah, make sure you stay on. Oh, and Elizabeth just hopped in. What an inspiration. You are awesome, Jen. Thank you for sharing your experience and perspective. Yeah. Aww. You're going to get a lot of people starting to. So you're going to
get rainbows. When everything rainbows, think of Morgan.
Yes, I love it. I love it. Thank you, Jen. Thanks, everyone. And just gratitude.